Good day. This is Health on the Hill. I'm Jackie Judd. In Washington, the lame duck session of Congress has begun. And while Republicans won't assume control of the House until January, there is expected to be a lot of political positioning regarding the health care reform law in these final weeks of the 111th Congress. And in the states, there is talk of further rebellion about the future of the overhaul law. Here to join me to discuss all of this and more, Mary Agnes Carey, senior correspondent for Kaiser Health News, and Julie Rofner of National Public Radio. Welcome to you both, ladies.
Thank you.
There is going to be politicking and policy tinkering in the final weeks of the Congress. Julie, what kind of politicking are we going to see regarding the health care law?
Well, certainly the Republicans feel like they one of the waves that they rode to their takeover of the House was antipathy towards the new health law. And they say they're going to do everything in their power to, if not out and out, repeal the law, which they admit, even with their coming power in the House, they will not have the votes to do. They're going to try to chip away at the waning public support as they see it for the law.
And do they begin to build support for that now, even though they're not in control of the House now?
Yes, I think so. So I think everything they do will be, you know, aimed at continuing to, as I say, chip away at to rail against it as much as they can. And if they won't, they're going to start that in the lame duck, and they're going to continue it when they get control of the apparatus of the House. So I think it, you know, it starts today and it just continues and continues, looking towards and then after the 2012 elections. I mean, it's just that they're not making a secret that that is their plan.
And one of the pieces of policy tinkering that we're going to see very soon is a subject that the three of us return to periodically through the year. It's known inside the Beltway as the doc fix. Unless Congress makes a move on December 1st, doctors who treat Medicare patients will see a 23% reduction in reimbursement. Mary Agnes, what can be done? What might be done?
Well, the American Medical Association has been pushing for a 13-month reprieve in this doc payment for this document fix, as you describe it. Now, that's unlikely to happen because of the expense of it. A 13-month fix would cost something like $15, $16 billion. There'll be other priorities they may also want to take care of in the lame duck session. But physicians are saying, now, wait a minute, we face this roller coaster all the time. There's impending cuts, and they're stopped. Sometimes it's a retroactive fix. But they're saying that doctors are thinking more about whether or not they're going to be in Medicare, and they might decide to stop taking new Medicare patients if this isn't taken care of. And so that'll be sort of the showdown over the Medicare physician payment formula.
How many times have you covered this story, Julie?
Oh, I don't want to think about it. But this is the fourth time this year, and that has never happened before. We've never had to do this four times in a year where doctors have faced this, you know, sword of Damocles hanging over their head. Twice it's had to be retroactive, where doctors have gone a period of weeks with getting basically no payments. What happens is every time this goes beyond the cutoff date, the Medicare agency basically stops paying anything in hopes that Congress will fix it before they have to cut the checks with the payment cut in it. So basically doctors wait a couple of weeks and get no payments in hopes that they will then get just their regular payments rather than the payments with the cut. So this has really been, you know, doctors are kind of at their wit's end. And the administration came out last week endorsing what the AMA asked for, which is a 13-month fix. Again, as Mary Agnes said, that would cost a significant amount of money that Congress would then have to come up mm-hmm. with. Now, in the past, when the Republicans were in charge, in fact, they didn't pay for these when they extended them, when they said, we're not going to do this. And we were talking then about cuts of, you know, 5-6 maybe up to 10 percentage points. No one is suggesting that doctors should be subject to payment cuts of 20 or 23%, which is what we're looking at here. So there's no one that suggests that this is anything approaching a legitimate policy thing to do. The only question is how to make up the money that it would cost to do it. Everybody agrees that this was a sort of failed idea back when they did it in 1997. It was a bipartisan formula. It was put in place. It worked okay for the first few years, and then it just got out of hand. And the reason the cuts have gotten so big is because they keep putting them off. So they've become additive. So we're now in this kind of place that everybody recognizes is ridiculous. Everybody recognizes that it needs to be fixed. And we've come to this sort of political gamesmanship place where nobody can agree on how to fix it. And the doctors and the Medicare patients are the ones who are really suffering.
Another piece of tinkering that may occur this year, maybe next, is the 1099, that's what it's known shorthand inside the Beltway, related to the healthcare reform law, having to do with whether small businesses were going to be too burdened by these new IRS filing requirements. Mary Agnes, what's going on there?
Well, Max Baucus, who's a Senate Finance Committee chairman, is going to introduce legislation to repeal this requirement. And here we're talking about a provision, as you say, in the health law that requires you to file a form with a 1099 form with the IRS if you purchase anything over $600 in goods or services from
a vendor.
Right. Small businesses up in arms. This is a phenomenal paperwork requirement. Democrats hate it. Republicans hate it. President Obama believes it should be repealed. But just as we were talking about with the Medicare physician payment fix, it's all about money. The pay for, again, a Washington term for how do you pay for repealing this requirement, is unclear. It's about $17 billion over 10 years. It was a revenue raiser to help pay for health reform. Where will the money come from? That's the big question.
Have you heard any ideas about where does the $17 billion come from? Where do they make it up?
No, I think, and they very much haven't said yet. Ironically, the 1099 issue was itself a pay for. It has nothing to do with health care. It was only put in the health reform bill in the first place because it was there to help pay for some of the health bill. It had been sitting around on lists of, you know, ways to improve tax compliance. And they put it in there. Nobody even knew it was in there for a couple of months. And then small business groups found out about it. And, you know, just everything exploded. The Democrats actually tried to, if not repeal it, at least soften it rather than having to file a 1099 for every time you bought $600 worth of products, at least, you know, boost that up to $5,000 worth of products. And the Republicans wouldn't let them do it because they sensed it was a great election issue.
Okay, one more item on the Hill before we move to the states. And that is Don Berwick, who's the administrator of Medicare and Medicaid, is finally going to make an appearance before a Senate committee. He got his job this past summer through a recess appointment. So I ask, why now? And what should we expect from that testimony and the questions that he gets?
I think he's going to be asked about anything and everything he's ever written, he's ever said. He's praised the National Health Service in Britain. Republicans will look at that and ask him a lot about that. They feel he's very much in favor of healthcare rationing, which I'm sure he'll say that he's not. He'll get lots of questions about implementation of the health law. Now, perhaps with the election behind us, maybe the administration feels a little freer to have him come up and testify and talk. But there's been a lot of pressure from Republicans, and some Democrats, too, have wanted him to get up there and talk about his plans.
Does it become an opportunity for Republicans on the committee to vent how they feel about the health care reform law through Don Berwick?
Absolutely. Don Berwick is the proxy for everything that Republicans hate about this law, which is ironic in so many ways because Don Berwick has always been sort of the epitome of, you know, what everybody sort of liked about, you know, how healthcare moves forward. He was the head of the Institute for Healthcare Improvement, which was this very nonpartisan group that was beloved by everybody in the healthcare industry, Republicans, Democrats. I mean, it was also very nonpartisan, aimed at, you know, improving quality and saving cost. I mean, he was just a very The idea of Don Berwick becoming a politically polarizing figure, if you'd said that 2 or 3 years ago, I can't think of anyone who could have ever imagined that happening. You know, he would have been just this consensus pick. So the idea that he's become this, you know, this political, you know, the center of this political firestorm is just so odd, to say the least. But he has, and I expect that fireworks will ensue at this, you know, first hearing where, you know, members get to throw all kinds of brickbats at him.
Okay. Let's move to the states now. There was a fascinating story that Texas, some lawmakers there, are actually talking about the possibility of pulling out of Medicaid. Julie, can they? If so, how would that happen? Is this realistic? Is there some political grandstanding involved? Is it real?
Well, certainly it is under consideration. And it was a fascinating story done by our colleagues at Kaiser News and the Texas Tribune about what is going on in Texas and perhaps some other states. I mean, first of all, it would certainly be legal for a state to drop out of Medicaid. It is a voluntary program. Now, given that, it should be noted that the multi-state lawsuit that's still going on down in Florida, one of the two remaining counts, in fact, the one that the states are still
in. To healthcare,
the challenge to the healthcare overhaul law says that the Medicaid portion of that law, and remember, states are required under this law, if if they are in Medicaid, to go to cover childless adults up to 133% of poverty. The states are charging that that is coercive, and they're basically being blackmailed because states can't afford to drop out of Medicaid because they get so much help from the federal government. So the idea that a state actually would drop out of Medicaid might pretty much moot that lawsuit. If a state could drop out of Medicaid, how could it then be coercive? But you have to wonder, Texas of all states with the largest percentage of uninsured people, to actually give up that federal funding and think that it could cover all of those uninsured people itself. And we're not talking just about, you know, single uninsured people, but we're talking about elderly in nursing homes, disabled people in and out
people
of institutions.
People with very, very, people with a lot of needs.
A lot of needs and very high health bills. That's quite a daunting task.
Is this an idea that other states may begin to look at, Mary Agnes?
The article talked about a dozen states, conservative lawmakers looking at what they spend on Medicaid and saying, could we do this cheaper on our own? We don't get the federal government money, but then again, we don't have the strings in their view of what the federal government requires you to do, how they require you to take care of this population. But on the flip side, a lot of advocates for these folks are saying, if you don't have Medicaid, they're going to flood the emergency rooms, that'll raise taxes for people in these states. As Julie mentioned, how do you handle nursing home care? How do you handle care for the disabled? Very expensive populations. Medicaid, in the eyes of many, has served these groups well. If states left Medicaid, how would they be served? So it's a really complex issue.
Okay, thank you both so much. Going to be an interesting couple of years until 2012. Julie Rovner of National Public Radio, Mary Agnes Carey of Kaiser Health News, thanks.
Sure.